Hey, pull up a chair. We're so glad to have you join us here on the Back Porch Education Podcast. For the next half hour or so, we're going to talk about all things educational. It's a wonderful day to learn something. Glad you could join us.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Back Porch. Glad to have you with us. And today, we're going to try something new. Jason has requested in an untypical fashion that he be allowed to read a poem.
That's it, man. I hope you're good with that, Steve.
I'm learning. I'm getting there.
Okay, cool.
The system is adjusting itself. Right. Let's put it that way.
Good. Well, I've only brought the best for us today. This one is by Alfred Lord Tennyson, and it's the intro to a super long set of poems, okay? So I'm not going to read all those because it's thousands of lines, but this intro I think is amazing. Well, okay, minimal commentary here. The title of the poem is In Memoriam A.H.H. The backstory is Tennyson's friend died when they were both I think at university, you know, they're pretty young. And so Tennyson, in his grief, starts writing tons and tons of these, well, kind of like laments, okay? So this In Memoriam is a collection of those, kind of forms a cohesive whole. So this introduction starts off everything that follows. Okay, so here goes. Strong Son of God, immortal love, whom we that have not seen thy face by faith and faith alone embrace, believing where we cannot prove. Thine are these orbs of light and shade. Thou madest life in man and brute. Thou madest death, and lo, thy foot is on the skull which thou hast made. Thou wilt not leave us in the dust. Thou madest man, he knows not why. He thinks he was not made to die. And thou hast made him. Thou art just. Thou seemest human and divine, the highest, holiest manhood, thou. Our wills are ours. We know not how. Our wills are ours to make them thine. Our little systems have their day. They have their day and cease to be. They are but broken lights of thee. And thou, O Lord, art more than they. We have but faith. We cannot know. For knowledge is of things we see. And yet we trust it comes from thee. A beam in darkness. Let it grow. Let knowledge grow from more to more. But more of reverence in us dwell. That mind and soul, according well, may make one music as before, but vaster. We are fools and slight. We mock thee when we do not fear, but help thy foolish ones to bear. Help thy vain worlds to bear thy light. Forgive what seemed my sin in me, what seemed my worth since I began, for merit lives from man to man, and not from man, O Lord, to thee. Forgive my grief for one removed, thy creature, whom I found so fair. I trust he lives in thee, and there I find him worthier to be loved. Forgive these wild and wandering cries, confusions of a wasted youth. Forgive them where they fail in truth, and in thy wisdom make me wise. Oh, it's a lot going on, isn't it?
And you want me to react to all that?
Well, you know what? Please do, but I'm just going to come out with it. In our conversation today, that is going to guide my reactions to the conversation. So, but you tell me, what do you think?
Knowing that the topic that we have chosen for today, you're reading along and all of a sudden I hear our little systems have their day. They have their day and cease to be. If education is anything in America today. Mm-hmm. It is a system. It's a constantly changing, one would say reforming or
hopefully
quote, unquote, improving hopefully. Or progressing system. But it nonetheless is a my old Southern professor of Greek used to tell us young men in college, marriage is a fine institution. Right. Like institutions. He, having been married for about 55 years, was smiling at us young men who were eager to try sure. out that institution. And young teachers jump in with visions mm-hmm. of grandeur. This is going to be the greatest year of my life. Of course, if it's the first year of teaching, I'm sorry, but it's not going to be the greatest year of your life. Our greatest systems won't even have much more than a day.
Exactly.
In the teaching experience, we're gonna learn humility rather quickly. But Jason and I have chosen the subject of how to prepare for a great year. We seek, even though we seem to wander around from time to time, we love practicality. We love the art of teaching, and we believe that what artists do is share what they do in hopes that it's in some way helpful mm-hmm. to others. And so Jason and I are going to talk just a little bit about some of the things that we've discovered in our, I guess if you combine the two of us, we're pushing 30, 35 years of teaching experience. So we've started a few school years and have some things that have failed us miserably and some things that have been, become part of the habit of the cycle of a teaching season.
Yeah.
Right? It's a lot like farming. Farmers fall into those routines, and in the merry month of January, we don't do much. And in March, things start to get exciting because we're going to plant. And June is, at least for the wheat farmers of Kansas, crazy, right?
Yep.
That's when the harvest is coming in of wheat, et cetera. And it's just this kind of routine for the year that farmers get into. And I think teachers do as well, right? There's the mid-year doldrums, and there's the wonderful moments of vacation, and there's the fresh
eternal
start.
Eternal third quarter.
Well,
the never-ending third quarter.
Into every life, there must be these moments when you either look at it as though a lot of great learning is going to happen now with very little interruption, or I'm going to be in this room with these kids for a really long time.
Right.
I think, given where we're at, why don't you talk for a few minutes about what's important to you when you're facing a new school year? What's going through your mind? What kind of things are you doing to get ready?
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So, again, I'm sticking with Tennyson here. The first thing that he does, well, it's a prayer. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
This first bit is addressed to the strong Son of God, immortal love, immortal, eternal love. Well, whichever one it is. So I like that immortal. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. I can think now. So I like that Tennyson begins this long, long task with a prayer, that says, that acknowledges his weakness and confesses his faults and asks for strength. Now, feel free to blow by that advice and get to something more concrete. But if you do, you do it at your own peril.
Yeah, well,
because that's huge.
There's reasons for cliches.
Right.
And I don't think telling folks to pray about what they're going to teach before they teach it is a cliche. If any negative connotation in cliche is taken away from me. I think it is something we say all the time because mm-hmm. it needs to be said all the time.
I'm
nervous that with time and experience, there's the possibility that the heart hardens up and, well, I've been doing this for a while. Maybe I don't need to pray about it.
Autopilot, yeah, right? Yeah. Like the first year teacher is scared out of their mind or excited out of their
right.
mind or whatever. But in any case, they're like, it's like anything. When it's new, the feel or the immediacy of needing the help of God is much more evident. Whereas I've been around the block quite a bit. I got this. You know, you can trick yourself that way.
And I think as soon as you do that, it's almost palpable with your students. Things totally change. Mm-hmm. And the student, you know, this is the joy of teaching, is that unless you're in a one-room schoolhouse or something where you have them for 8 or 10 years, and very few people teach in that, most of us teach a student just a year or a few years, and then they move on. So they might not even see that process going on within us of the changes that occur as a teacher starts to get a false sense of security or starts to pray less or doesn't prepare as well. I know many seasoned teachers who would describe their preparations as winging it. To them, summer is downtime. Summer is when we go and do other things, and it's unfortunate in some cases they have to go earn money elsewhere.
Right,
you know, they're
right,
supplementing their rather meager finances. But summer to me is a time where I try and refresh, but it's also a time where I basically feel like I got to do two things. Coming out of a school year, I've got to, while it's still fresh, kind of wander back through the material. I often do it, you know, with a red pen, just like I would a student's paper. I know that's not cool these days, but red stands out to me. So, just kind of making some marks and some notes. Sometimes I do that as I'm teaching, but often in the midst of a lesson or what, you forget. And so I try once a quarter, frankly, to kind of end the quarter by some retrospective consideration. So that as I enter a summer, there's no way I can revamp. I teach too many preparations to revamp it all every summer. But usually there's a class or two that's sticking out that's the least happy of mine. And so mm-hmm. if I've marked it up, if I'm aware of where I would like to improve, this unit could use some, this book was kind of dry, maybe I'm going to teach a different book next year, whatever. I've got some notes to start with, and I've got a summer to plan out without killing myself, get myself excited. I think that's a lot of what the summer's about, is getting myself excited for new ideas and new things that I can do in the classroom. And that's probably the biggest deal that I'm focused on when I'm trying to get ready for a new school year, is getting myself. I think prayer is important, and I think freshness.
Yes.
I've taught this several times. Is there a different way to approach it, or is there a different book we're going to... Teaching English is kind of cool because you can... It's not the same...
There's lots of books.
Yeah, there's a wider variety of textbooks. Right. And so, for instance, I teach a course in which we do a Shakespeare play every year, but I've got six to pull from. So only once every 6 years do I teach Much Ado About Nothing. As much as I enjoy that play, I've got my six. And so every year I'm kind of looking forward to teaching. I haven't taught Macbeth now in several years, and I'm starting to itch again to get mm-hmm. into that. So mm-hmm. I think there's things like that that teachers can do to get themselves up for, especially if they've been teaching for a little while.
Good stuff. I want to say something about summer that you kind of touched on after we come back from break.
Great.
Hey, during this brief break, I wanted to encourage you to use the share buttons we have on our website in order to help us get folks tuned into the show. Our goal is to encourage as many educators, homeschoolers, NFL punters, and donut makers as we can with these podcasts. So help us get the word out. Share our Facebook page. Send folks a link to one of your favorite episodes. Do whatever you can to help us share this craziness with either your best friends or, if it's more appropriate, your worst enemies. We will love you all the more for sharing our love. Thanks. And now, back to the show.
Okay, Steve, so you kind of said it, but I just want to make it explicit. Summer, you know, preparation, is a time for me of massive inputs, right? I just expended a ton of mental energy And I gave a lot away, you know, like I was, I was passing information along. I was pulling from references that I know. And that's, oh my gosh, that's so wonderful. It's so rewarding. Well, at the end of the year, I'm tired. And what I've learned, what I've been thinking about, some of that feels stale or not quite right anymore or whatever, you know, or frankly, I forgot it. So summer preparation for the school year for me looks like a lot of reading or a lot of language learning or, you know, whatever it is. But I would say it doesn't have to be directly I think lots of stuff is applicable. So if I'm going to teach an English course, I might read a history book and I'm not going to feel bad about that. I'm going to feel great about that, you know, or I might read a math book for all that matters. You know, I think to the extent that we can pull from different places and bring it to students who are coming from different places, that's a huge thing. But in any case, you've got to be drinking stuff, you know, after all the work that you just did. So I think that's a really important
thing. If I can build off of that. So I understand the refilling or the, but I would almost use the term broadening. Because in Tennyson's poem, he's talking about this ever-growing act of God in transferring wisdom to us.
Hey, that's what I'm ending with.
Right. Okay.
My closer, because that's a huge thing. But come on, keep going. That's good stuff.
So in the summertime, when it's not agenda driven.
Yeah.
Okay. This particular year, I'm teaching four different preparations, and so three of them are English courses, and one of them is a seminar course. And so basically, at any given moment, my head is in four books, and. Mm-hmm. I still read outside of that purview, but that's where my brain is. And summer is when I get to put all that aside. And it's almost a philosophical thing with me. I don't think there's anything I could possibly do other than not do anything that would, mm-hmm. whatever I do during the summer is going to add to my teaching. Because it's going to be making me... If I'm studious towards it, if I'm the sponge, if I'm behaving as I ask my students to behave, and aware and observant, and asking questions, you know, if it's vacationing with my family, there's wisdom that's being gathered there. If it's travel, if it's reading, if it's digging a garden bed. It's forming me, the teacher, into a person I wasn't yesterday. And I do, and it's not to say that I don't take any care. I'm always looking out for, I just finished a great book on Dante. And I moved it up my reading list because of some of the difficulties I was having during the school year. I've been teaching Dante now for several years. And I'm not happy with the limited knowledge I have of that work. And I thought maybe somebody else's perspective will kickstart some of my own thoughts. But what I'm worried about with making a summer program is that then I'm going to overwhelm my students with this discrete amount of information that I learned this summer. It's going to be sort of a school becomes driven by what Mr. Elliott planned. He read it. He liked it. Now we got to suffer through it kind of stuff.
No. Yeah, that's good. And that's why your broadening word, I think that's so fitting because, you know, all truth is God's truth, no matter where it's found. And the good teacher is making connections all over the place. And so... I mean, as an example, I had a teacher in my graduate program who she started talking about her aqua, what's that called? Like aqua exercise class or whatever. And she made a point about synapses firing in the brain and how brains are changing. But she brought that to bear on teaching writing. And without getting sidetracked by that point, our point is that was a great thing to do. So her going to her aqua exercise class made her more able to articulate an important point about teaching writing.
I've already got my summer distraction set up for me. My boys, the last Christmas, bought me a smoker. And
so
it's still out in the garage unassembled. That's typical Steve Elliott. I don't need it yet because I'm in the whole, I use Evernote, the little notebook system that you can get free online. And the reason I use it, it's got a web clipper. And so I'm just devouring whole websites. I mean that as a pun. I'm just smoking through these smoker places, just pinning all kinds of, grabbing out of them all kinds of great ideas. And the summer's going to be when I just, you know, once or twice a week.
Yeah, wake up and say, what's on, what's here today?
Well, we're smoking. It's, what am I going to get started tonight?
Yeah.
And continue to check on the fire throughout the night so that sometime late tomorrow afternoon, after 18 to 20 hours of slow smoking, we roll around and in luxurious flavors of something that's been properly smoked. And I think that's part of preparing for a good year is having a great summer that isn't all about school.
Yeah.
But I do think, even if we've maybe used up close to two sessions talking about ourselves, the school year is coming. What do I do to get ready for it? And I will say that there are some things, there are ways to look forward and prepare yourself. We had this thing in college where a bunch of us would get together and our whole goal was planned spontaneity, which is an oxymoron.
Wow. Right?
And we were morons, so right. Consuming oxygen, so therefore. But no, the notion was that we were just going to put just enough planning into our parties, as it were, that they didn't flop. But the last thing we wanted is some dude with a bullhorn shouting, now we have to move on to the next, right?
And I want
my teaching to feel, my students comment on the fact that they love to try and get me on rabbit trails. They're going to pretty quickly in the school year, I'm sure, figure out that Mr. Elliott's got a smoker. And so what did you smoke lately, Mr. Elliott? And they'll, of course, enjoy the pun there. But they try and get on books or cooking or my kids or and I got news for them. It's all connected.
Yeah, exactly.
And they get upset because it seems like I can take what I had for dinner last night and find Nietzsche in it somewhere. And here we are back to the book that we're supposed to be talking about.
Right, exactly.
So I think that there's a way to plan for that. But I think we're probably at the point where we need to take a break. And when we come back, maybe each of us give just a few basic practical suggestions to teachers wanting to just assure themselves they're getting ready for the new school year in the right way.
Yeah, good.
While this show is a back porch discussion, it does cost a little bit of money. So if you're liking what you hear, consider helping us out. You can simply use the donation button on the website to send along a one-time gift, or we have subscriber plans for those who want to commit to regular support. Subscribers can get premium rewards depending on how nice a chair you pull up on the porch. We have everywhere from sitting on the floor to our finest rocking chair available. But whatever you can do, know that it helps us keep the conversation going. And for that, we heartily thank you.
All right, Steve. So here they are, practical, pointed tips. And I'm going to pull them all from Tennyson. How do you like that?
You're probably stretching it, but go for it, man.
Yeah. Well, of course I'm stretching it. But everything's connected, right? So, okay, the first thing is I want to say Tennyson wrote continually. He wrote like he was in grief and he wrote like 150 sonnet things, you know, 40 liners about his grief and processing his grief. So, teachers, in preparation and in reflection, pick up the pen, write something down, write lots of things down. That's going to be a fantastic way for you to keep a record and also not only record, but also process what you think is happening in your own world. Okay. That's number one. The second one you touched on with the little systems that Tennyson talks about. Our little systems have their day, but they are but broken lights of thee, right? God is bigger than our little systems. And I think acknowledging that is an enormously important part of teaching well. And it leads me to number three. And this is the stuff that I just can't get enough of out of Tennyson's poem, where he says, let me just read it. Yeah, here we go. The distinction between knowledge and reverence, right? So when we're teaching, we can teach people to be more knowledgeable. We can give them knowledge, but reverence is a different thing. And here's what Tennyson says, let knowledge grow from more to more. Yeah, that's great. Okay, you want some more knowledge? Here it is. But more of reverence in us dwell, that mind and soul, according well, may make one music as before, but vaster. So, to the extent that we can, how can I say this? Encourage reverence from our students as we transmit knowledge to them, man, that's an idea worth contemplating for a decade. You know, like that's really good stuff. So think on these things. That's my.
It's almost like you could put an addendum on your third tip of be patient. Right? We always want to get it all done.
Yeah.
Summer flies by.
Totally.
And that school year just faces you in the face. And I think at times it's a cowing thing where we have the best of plans in June, but like you said, we're tired, and so June's gone with us just taking naps and or smoking meats. And before we know it, there's July 4th, and we're sitting around, it's the middle of the summer, and we're going, oh my goodness, but in August school starts, and it's okay. All our little systems, that's just running around in my head. Well, let me see if I can at least say two things that are general and one that's
for me.
I'll save it for third, but the third one is how I set my heart at rest at the start of a school year. Teaser. The first one's a big one. I'm constantly coming back rather than getting lost into the details of a school year. I find that the best way to get myself ready to have a great year in a given class is to spend as much time as I can reflecting on what the big idea is. There is this Greek notion. I'm sure we can do a whole series of episodes on it at some point about the logos, this overarching sort of controlling idea. But a good lesson comes from a unit that is a part of a year that has attached itself to a whole curriculum, and of course curriculum is just Latin for map, that recognizes the whole thing is the thing. And so while I may be dissatisfied with this unit or a specific lesson in the unit, getting it right is not near as big a deal as keeping the big idea clear. If I always am aware that I'm in a forest, I might forget which tree I'm hiding behind at the moment, but I know I'm in the forest. And so I,
yeah,
I'll talk in a moment about how that works out for me practically. That's my number three teaser. But secondly, with that, and I hinted at it in what I was saying with the Logos, there is a cosmos, right? We're all a part of a greater society. And so one of the things that I try to do to get ready for a good school year, it's most schools require teachers to come back several days in advance and do stuff, sit through really long meetings about policy and how everybody needs to bust kids for chewing gum in the bathroom or whatever. But what often happens, they try and do all those meetings in the morning and then they give us afternoon time. And I've had this conversation probably 20 times with teachers. What are you going to do this afternoon? Oh, I thought I'd do some preparation for school. It's coming up next week. Yeah, like what? And when I see that sort of deer in the headlights look in a teacher's eyes, I say, well, let's get a soda and sit down and talk. And as we talk, most of my questions are about, well, what are you teaching this year? What are you going to do with it? Got any exciting ideas? Did you teach this last year? How did it go for you? So on and so forth. And so the cosmological notion to me is that we're fitting in with a whole world of education, and that by interacting with other educators throughout the summer, during the school year, any chance we get, you know, I try hard to bring others into my teaching, because it's amazing to me how many great ideas they've got for me. You know what I'm saying?
That's huge, dude.
I'm always I try to find two kinds of people that I can talk to at the beginning of the school year. Sometimes it's people that are newer than me and need some help and need some comfort and some guidance. But I'm always looking for that dude, and it's harder to find these days, I have to admit. But I'm looking for I'm looking for the guy with the most
experience. You're becoming that dude.
And I've got one at my current school. I think he's somewhere in the 40th year or 45th year of his teaching career. And he knows the stuff.
Wow.
He's calm. He's got a million stories, and they're all hilarious. And yet there's little nuggets of wisdom, all little barnacles of wisdom all over those stories. And if I think sometimes we get so rushed and so panicky that we don't realize we would be a whole lot better off just taking a break and looking around and realizing we're all in this together. And together we got a whole lot more ideas than if I feel like I'm shut up in my room having to do it all on my own. But practically speaking, my last one, here it is.
Here it is, everybody.
I don't plan lessons. Probably my third year of teaching, I realized the futility of the individual lesson plan. My college highly emphasized it to me. I had to take these ACT APT tests when I was student teaching, where I had to have this really involved lesson plan, and I had to hit 52 different points of skills and blah, 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 blah. And I did fine on it. I learned the system. But when I got into teaching, I said, I can't write a 5-page lesson plan for my first year of teaching was 6 preps, 3 science classes, and 3 Bible classes. And they hadn't landed a man on... And you're going to say, well, of course they hadn't, given how old you are, Steve. I'm starting to teach in 1990, and the textbook is dated in the 50s. For science. That's a little rough on science. They haven't got a man on the moon, and I'm trying to teach, you know, earth science and astronomy and this kind of stuff. So I had to do a lot of digging and a lot of creating on my own. And I very quickly realized that whole APT lesson plan thing ain't working for me now. I can't produce all of that. So what's the bare minimum? What do I need to go in and teach a great lesson? And it dawned on me that really, the lessons are just little pieces of a unit. And especially in science and to some extent in theology, I can easily grasp the 6 or 8 or 12 units that I'm going to cover in a school year. And then it's a matter of recognizing that not all units are created equal as to time and as to intensity and even as to assessment. Mm-hmm. So I started developing a year plan that was just a little set of boxes, five columns across, and you could probably guess 36 rows. And I've got 36 weeks of 5 days each. I would block out days that we were taking vacations or whatnot, and that would leave me. And then instead of trying to fill in every box with details, mm-hmm. nowadays for English, for instance, it's just making sure I've got enough time to cover all the books that I've been asked to cover. So we're going to give, 25 days to Dante, mm-hmm. and, Huck Finn, we'll give that 3 days, I'm just kidding. But you're negotiating with yourself. And the reason I say that puts my sure. heart at rest is I have a plan. And back to your point, or Tennyson's point, God's got a plan too, and his is going to happen, and mine is just going to try and flex with his. Right. And by having
yours will have
some sense, I do this all the time. We get into something, and I hadn't taught David Copperfield in school ever. I had read it to my sons, and we talked about it, and it was a part of our family. But in a classroom, I never taught it before until this year. And I'm getting into it, and I had given it X amount of time. I wound up teaching it for Y a little bit longer. But that was I wasn't freaking out because I knew where I was going to rob the space from. I had built into the plan, if we get to this book, great. And if not, they're not dying.
Yep.
I checked that out with the powers that be to make sure I had that flexibility. But having it from a plan like that is way better than this minutia. I've got every day planned out. And man, if one day doesn't work, or if they suddenly call a pep rally in the that wasn't in it. Instead of being angry, pep rally, don't they know my entire year is messed up now. I can flex. I'm cool. It's workable because mm-hmm. I've done a little bit of planning, totally. But I haven't overplanned. And I think that for me allows me to walk into a school year with a sense of where I want to go, but without this obsessiveness that I've got to every day stay on track or I'm going to screw the whole thing up.
Mm-hmm. Steve, that sounds a lot like planned spontaneity to me.
You could say that. Just enough planning.
I think that's good.
Just enough planning that they think it's all coming out of my top of my head.
Right. And but what they'll learn over time is that they're helping.
Yep.
Right. That they're making the motor run too, that it's a team effort, that we're all involved, that they're steering, they have agency, they're guiding. Like, that's good.
Well, we've gone so far in our English program to say, we're going to tell you what you're going to read for 3 years, freshman, sophomore, and junior, is a set ancient, medieval, and modern overview of good literature. And especially mm-hmm. the freshman. Oh my goodness. The Iliad. They're in Virgil right now. Why do we have to read these old books? But the carrot we dangle out there is your senior year, in your junior year, you as a class ask for 2 semester elective courses. You have to take English your senior year, but you get to choose what the subject is. Now, really don't care. And of all things, we're doing, the juniors have chosen for next year to do a semester on Lois Lowry. They had an author they liked. And I said, well, mm-hmm. excellent, because I'm as excited about teaching that as you are about learning it. And then of all things, I must be doing something right. The most popular choice, which we're going to do second semester, was Shakespeare. While the colleges are yanking that thing out of their curriculum because nobody likes Shakespeare anymore, it's irrelevant and phobic everything, my students are going, we kind of dig the Shakespeare dude. They did Henry V with me this year, and they're like, can we do more of this? And I said, trust me, he wrote way more than we got time for. So,
right. Let me put in my... vote now for Love's Labor's Lost.
Super hilarious. Boss is allowing me to do is not only let them decide but the first week or so of school is going to be us mapping out what we want to do.
That's amazing.
I'm going to see if I've got enough years in me of experience to actually pull that off, or it's going to freak me out. But yeah. Because notice that they're going to, we want to do Titus Andronicus. Well, I never read or seen that play. So I have a feeling I'll be learning it with them, which is not a problem to me.
Yeah, man. Dude, that's great.
Well, once again, we've done it. We've managed to while away a half hour talking about things we love. And as we wrap up today, I want to make sure that it's clear to all of our listeners, both of you, no, just kidding, that we value your input. There is a comment section on our website. There is, if you want to give us input, you can find the way to do it. And we would love to have it. So please let us know what you think. If you got questions, you got possible episode suggestions.
You just want to yell at us about something we've done wrong, something we horribly messed up.
I'll make sure Jason reads all the criticism you have of him. And any input you would like to provide me for his poems, maybe put in some just some handy one-liners that I can use with any poem that fits anything. Because I'm running out of my cliches for his. My little systems have had their day. So.
Good stuff. All right, guys. Well, we'll talk to you again.
Well, thanks again for joining us in this great conversation about education. We hope you will not just listen, but participate. Leave us a comment, suggestion, or thought on our website. You just never know when we'll use it on the show. Until next time, pursue joy and learn something.